Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stinnett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stinnett. Today, we have a fun podcast topic, so we're going to talk about a few new things in technology that are like very fun and hopefully interesting. And then, if we've got time, we also have some trivia that we're going to do at the end of the episode today. So I hope everyone enjoys both of those. But to start with our fun new technologies, and Rochelle, this is one that I had never seen or heard of before you mentioned it, but it's the Mission Ferrari, which is an immersive Ferrari roller coaster. Where had you seen this before, Rochelle? I was curious where you found this one.
So as I was telling you earlier, you know, so I was watching the Super Bowl and doing some of the Super Bowl commercials or whatever you call those things. They talked about the Sphere in Las Vegas. And so I started researching some of these immersive technologies and I ran across this one. And this is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. So how do you make a roller coaster immersive? You know, so there's this link, it's called Bloop. Let me see if I can send this. I don't know if I sent that to you. It's called B-L-O-O-L-O-P, I think it is. There you go. That's what it is. I'm going to send this link to you. I don't know if I sent this to you or not, but it was really interesting. These people do things about immersive technologies. This word, the word itself was strange because I couldn't even imagine, you know, where do these people get this word from? You know, so it's an interesting spelling of the word. But these people kind of track these kind of new innovative technologies. And so one of the things that they looked at is like, where these kind of immersive technologies are going. And so they were the ones who did the Mission Ferrari thing. And I can find it, all the pieces and parts. So, yep, so there you go. There's the, yeah, too crazy for me. I don't think riding this ride, Drew, I think this might, you might be a little bit more bolder than I am, but
I was going to say, it looks very fun. It's and if for folks that haven't seen it, it's like a, I mean, it's a roller coaster, but it also looks like it projects like custom surroundings like around you. So that's like, I just remember when I was younger, these were just coming around, which were when you would go to an amusement park, instead of riding on a roller coaster, you could like sit in one of these things. I think there was a Star Wars one where it sort of like shakes the car around and like, your vision is changing, so it sort of feels like you're in motion, but you're not. And this sort of looks sort of like a combination of those. Like, it is an actual roller coaster that goes upside down and flies around, but it also looks like it's got all these screens around it that put you in places that you are not, which I've never seen those that smash together like that. And it looks pretty fun.
No, it does not.
Are you not a roller coaster person?
And no, I mean, first of all, even as a young person, you know, like the first time I rode on one of those things that went up and came down and dropped. Okay. No, this is not fun. You know, so after I got off the roller coaster, I swore, you know, Lord, if you let me get off this thing, I promise I will never get on anything like this again. You know, because, you know, normal some of the people were screaming and hollering and having a really good time. I was in pure fear. It's like, please let me get off this thing, because it went up, down, around, and all kinds of things. And people were, some of the people were really enjoying themselves. But I was like, fear for my life. So I was like, okay. You know, and now you see on the news, people get stuck in these things. Can you, I mean, I just couldn't even imagine. That would just be like a sin worse than anything to get stuck in the highest.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That could be like a true nightmare. Like I would hate to be. I enjoy roller coasters for the most part, but I would never want to get stuck on one like that. That's like a true nightmare.
So, have you ridden many roller coasters?
Oh yeah. I don't ride as many like nowadays, and I didn't ride any until I was maybe in high school, and then finally got used to, or I say like used to them. They still scared me, but I wasn't scared enough to not go on them.
Oh
And
my.
they were always fun. Those Busch Gardens roller coasters, love that Loch Ness monster.
I think the first one I read, rode was in King's Dominion in Virginia. And then in Charlotte. Let me tell you how much my family does not love me. So I had ridden a roller coaster in Charlotte. I don't know what it was, And so they were, my husband and my daughter rode together. And so there wasn't room for me to ride. So they had bought a ticket. So I got on after them. So I rode this terrible roller coaster. It was absolutely awful. And then when I got off the roller coaster, my body and my brain was in pure shock. They started throwing these little poppets at my feet. You know what a poppet
Oh
is?
yeah,
Oh
little
my
pieces of like gunpowder that
I swore I would never speak to either one of them again. So in the event these many 40, 50 years later, if they turn up dead, I have a legitimate reason to kill them because they had surprised me. I mean, it's just absolutely awful. So I would just say, so this I don't even know how you said this word, bloop, blue loop. I don't even know what that word is.
Yeah, BLOOBLOOPLOOP, blue loop.
Yeah, whatever that
Interesting.
word is, they give awards to these innovative, immersive kinds of things. And in 2023, they went and they looked at all of these kinds of fun things. And this Mission Ferrari was one of the ones that they really highlighted. It was very interesting. So first of all, it's in Dubai, right? And you need all the money you have. So you need to rob like four banks to go to Dubai. It's very expensive to go there. And then to ride on this very expensive, very innovative ride, Mission Ferrari should tell you everything you need to know. You don't need to know anything else. That's telling you Mission Ferrari, Dubai, innovative. Those four words should tell that four, those four things should tell you everything. You don't need to go unless you've got a whole lot of money. It's a Ferrari ride, so that's going to tell you to be very high end. And then it's a mission. Okay.
The
Do your
world's
will
most
before
expensive.
ride, right? Do your will before you go.
Maybe they'll dumb it down and bring it over here to like Busch Gardens or somewhere, then we can get on there.
Believe me, there are ones here in the United States. You've got a few more to talk about, Drew. So I didn't cover all, but there's Super Mario in Japan. So
So
that
that
was.
was. I thought that was a really interesting one as well. So the Super Mario is a Super Mario, they call it Super Mario World.
Super Mario World.
Yeah. And it is a like park where they have brought the like world of Super Mario to life, which is like really cool. I've never been to it, of course, but it looks, I think it's there's one in Japan and it's there one in Florida as well.
Yep, they're supposed to be expanding the one in Florida. I don't think the one in Florida is fully done yet, if I understand it, but I understand that they are bringing that. So, I mean, these immersive, innovative kind of things. And when they say immersive, Drew, can we assume that they're talking about AR and VR and
So
kind of things like that? Is that what immersive means in this category?
I think there are AR and VR parts to it, but the part that I find like most interesting is the actual buildings and like objects in the world. So they've gone and like if you think about Mario, a lot of people think about like Super Mario Kart and like games where you see these like iconic characters in situations and on like special tracks. And I think that's at least the pictures that I've been most impressed with, like that's what they've done is they've taken a level from like Super Mario or from Mario Kart or Super Mario World or many of these Mario games and like actually built it in the real world. So like if there's a statue of a big, fake monster turtle, they've actually made that statue and put it in where like you could walk by and could probably like I don't know if they want you touching this stuff, but it's actually like a physical thing that you can visit. And it all like all of the design looks like really close to the video games. Like all the pictures I've looked at, like it looks like you're in a like surreal Super Mario world.
Wow. I bet you young people will love that. I don't know if gamers will find that interesting, but I'm sure somebody will. Here in North Carolina, I'm sure this happens other places too. You have Comic-Con and all these other kind of big e-conferences that they have. It's really amazing what the world of gaming has done. They've even talked about AI and gamification and all these things. So they're really taking what we really knew is what may have be classified as children's games and moved it into a whole new sphere of how we understand gaming. So, but Drew, then we get to these other parts. And holograms have been around for a long time. It really is amazing where they're going now. There have been a lot of talk about moving holograms out of this, kind of, if you will, 3D world of, not really important, just something that you think about in the movies or something like that. But now holograms have come into the mainstream, Drew.
Yeah, and this was another cool one. And this holograms are that's one of those technologies that it feels old because it's been in movies forever. Well, not forever, but for a long time. But there's not an like there hadn't been a lot of like practical applications of it. And the ones that were, and I think the ones that still are like almost like optical illusions. Like it looks like there's something there if you're standing at the right angle and your eyes are sort of being tricked into doing it. But it's they're getting like more and more lifelike now. I mean, I think the biggest one was it Tupac or somebody that they showed at a con at like one of those big music festivals, and it was like, oh, this now it like might actually be getting real. And I don't know the technology behind how they got him up there, but the thing that I thought was cool that you shared yesterday was they have this like box that projects a hologram. So you have like two people being recorded in some location, and like images of 3D images of them are being projected into this like looks like almost like a hefty phone booth, and like it looks like people are in there, and like I thought that was really cool. I've also heard it be applied to things like teleconferencing. So like we're on Zoom right now, and we see each other in two dimensions, but what if our screens could like poke that out and we could actually see the depth. Like that would be very cool. Even though, it's we're not actually there's no touching, but like if there were like this field of depth that you could interact with other people, like even just things like this, I think that would be really cool. The Google has one that they haven't released yet that I think is a just like a really, really high definition TV and high def cameras on the other sides. And people have described it like it looks like the person you're talking to, like their head is literally in the TV that you're looking at. And things like that make me excited. Like, I feel like that could be good. 'Cause like I look at our camera quality right now, and it's like, I can tell that you're Rochelle and that I'm Drew, but like, we don't look like 3D beings. We look sort of like, pictures on a screen.
I was thinking about two things. One, I was thinking about going back to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the one that we did when we did the talk. Do you remember the scene where Mike TV goes into the TV and he's able to pull the chocolate candy bar out?
Oh,
Do you
yeah.
so think about that in the world of holograms, so really where you can interact with someone. So let's just say you have a pencil at your house, and I can just reach in through Zoom and pick up a pencil from your house and bring it into my house. So think about things like that. To further that, think about adding AI to that, right? So artificial intelligence, and not generative AI, but super AI, where we are able to even use robots to be more interactive. So I do think that there is a place, the way the data that I did the research on is talking about holograms in higher education. But I do think that there are places where holograms may really be able to add another dimension in how we interact with each other. We're talking a little bit about what Tesla did. What is his name? The Tesla fella.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, him. Another name I can't say. But think about that. People who are handicapped, physically having their bodies that can't, move. But think about what hologram. There's a lot. These new technologies are coming that really might change our world, especially where people are physically unable to do things like that. You were talking about the Tupac thing, but there are people who talk about he's still alive, Elvis is still alive, so holograms might be able to give us new versions of how we see ourselves and see people who are, maybe even dead. But we must move on. We can't spend a whole bunch of time. We did talk a little bit about Super Mario and all that stuff, so I'm not going to spend any time with that. But I will say that, in the gaming world, we have come so far in gaming. Think about Tetris. I used to love that game. Oh, it's one of my favorite games, and Thinking about Pac-Man, these are really simple games. And the per and there've been a lot of other ones, Donkey Kong. These games were really simple games. But the people who had the mind to build them, they were really not as advanced as what we're seeing today now. Everett plays PlayStation all the time. He has created an image of himself that's almost identical in likeness and
That's
everything.
really cool.
And he's created his own team, not just from the players that are in the place that are in the association of, in the NFL, but in soccer. But he's created his own team from images that he's built from pieces and parts of people. So like he might take a part of Michael Jack Jordan, Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan and Kobe and put together a super player, right?
That's
Think about
awesome.
it. But that's not what they were creating back then. And so gamification has really come a long way. What I would really like to see they do with gamification is put it in elementary education. I've talked about this, a long time ago when I used to teach, adult education, taking the Canterbury Tales and changing it into players, right? So the wife of Bath, instead of it being that boring character, changing it into a football player or a basketball player or a soccer player makes it more exciting to people to read, as opposed to this, woman who's on her way to see somebody for something, but the turn
Yeah.
is something that makes it exciting. Think about if you did that for gamification. If you
Oh,
put
yeah.
gamification in education, you would almost obliterate learn people being able to read, because you would make fun to read as opposed to doing it in these dry ways that people are not interested in. Think about War and Peace. That book is the size of, like it's huge. Turn that into a game. Turn War and Peace and any of these things to make it easier for people to read. Okay, I'm over it. So now
By the way, I just watched an 8 hour version of the movie War and Peace a couple weeks ago. It
eight
was
hour
very good.
version of
Yeah,
it. Wow.
it was 3 parts. It was like maybe when they were each like, yeah, I guess a couple of them were 2.5 hours, so I guess it was about 8 hours. It's between 6 and 8 hours, but it was very fun. And
Doctor,
look, I don't know if I could read that much. It's a lot, but it's
I
really
read
interesting.
it. It really is. It's a great book. I mean, I will tell people any of those books, whatever it is, Jane Eyre, all of these books are absolutely interesting to read. I mean, they really tell phenomenal stories. But try doing that with a young black or brown boy. Try doing that with a child who has been deprived of something or a child who's had these experiences. This is not something they want to read, or children that are academically gifted. You have to find the niche that people are interested in and get them to read that, as opposed to standing up in front of, there was a article that came out of Wharton, I believe, that said the smartest person in the room is always the instructor. You have to find a way to reverse that, and you can't, anyway. Okay, I'm over it. So Drew, so we were talking about this earlier. So watching the Super Bowl, I saw the first time the images of the sphere. Have you seen it? Have you been able to see it?
Yes. And I had not heard of it until it was maybe a little bit before the Super Bowl, but like one weekend I just started seeing like ads and pictures of the sphere like everywhere. And it was almost like, hey, this thing has been around forever. Check it out. And then I didn't realize like it just I think it's only like less than a year old. Like it's pretty new. And it's like a giant crystal ball. And is it in downtown Las Vegas, somewhere in Las Vegas?
Las Vegas. I don't think it's downtown because I didn't, but
Okay.
it's not far. It's not far,
Okay.
because they needed to have the land to build this thing,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
it's
And it's
amazing.
really like a spherical like event venue. And like the sphere is made out of LCD screens and it looks amazing. Like it looks super immersive.
It really does. And what they're able to do with it, what they showed in the little bit of time they allotted to it during the Super Bowl, I mean, they could change it to air anything. They can change out and make it look, I mean, it's just truly amazing. But again, like Dubai, you need to bring your big credit card, and I mean, I imagine, over time they'll probably bring the price down, probably because it's so new. I think U2 was the first group to perform there. And from what I remember, the bottom line price was like $800 to go see them, and it went up from there.
Music is always expensive to see as well. Like their concert tickets are insane. And they've done like sets where they have like a roller coaster on the show as well. Like speaking of roller coasters, it seems I've never been to a U2 concert, but it sounds crazy.
I haven't been in years. I mean, when they first came out, before they were who they think they are, but it's just really, really, I mean, it's a beautiful place. And I would say, if you have a bucket list, you should probably put that on your bucket list, especially you're a technologist, because I mean, to see what technology has done, that's probably one of the places you should go see. I mean, it's truly amazing, to have something like that, and think somebody had the mind to create these things. It's just amazing, to
I mean,
see.
it's something like out of a sci-fi movie. It's almost like Truman Show or something, but made, in this smaller than an entire town. But like, it's big. Like, you can put on a U2 concert inside of it. It's got to be. It can't be but so small.
Right. I mean, and that's just truly amazing, and I mean, I didn't see how many people it sat, but I mean, depending on what kind of thing they're trying to do, but I mean, that's just truly amazing that they have done this kind of thing. I mean, it's just amazing. And I mean, as I say this all the time, technology is truly amazing, what we're able to do with it. And the minds who think of these things, just think about this. You're sitting at home, and you come up with this idea, oh my God, I can make this. And you get two or three people with like-minded ideas who believe in you and say, hey, let's go do this. I don't know what it is. Nobody believes in me because I have these ideas all the time, sitting in the bathroom, and, oh my God, this is such a great, okay, I'm over it. Okay, Drew, we need to move on to our trivia. And so,
All
trivia,
right.
Drew, I'm going to ask you all my trivia questions because I sat there. And every last one of these questions, they were like, I have a gazillion of these trivia questions, Drew. I stockpile them for you. So,
I love these trivia questions, by the way. And I will say, like, most of these I did not know. There are going to be a few of them that I knew, but I was way off on most.
I was sitting in that thinking like, oh my God. And so just for our audience, they're not true technical trivia questions. They're a little bit different. So, don't be mad with us. We go off the script a little bit with these. So please forgive us for not being truly all technical questions. So, Drew, here's my first one. What is the distance from Earth to the sun?
So this was one when I was trying to think about like what that distance would be. Like I have almost no clue of a dis like it's hard for me to wrap my brain around a distance that far. So like I was thinking, trying to figure it out, like the speed of light is oh God, I just like looked it up and I've already forgotten it. Like almost 200,000 miles a second. Which like that's pretty fast, but it's not quite as fast as I was expecting like the speed limit of the known universe to be. And I know you always hear that like it takes the light like a few minutes to reach the Earth from the sun. So like when we look up at the sky, the sun that we're seeing now is actually like the sun from a few minutes ago. So I would have guessed like, I don't know, a few million miles. That seems correct. But that is nowhere near right. It is 93 million miles away, which is that's a long way away. Like that's almost unfathomable to me.
Me too. I mean, like, how far is 93 million miles? Like, from here to China, how many miles is that? From here to Dubai, how many miles is that? Like, 93 million miles. What is that? It's like, good Lord, what is that? I'm like, good Lord.
It's crazy. And it would take us forever. Well, not forever. I mean, that's something like getting to the sun is like not an unachievable task for our like world today.
Well, I mean, obviously somebody has measured this to know that. I mean, like, how do they know? Did that somebody get a ruler? Did somebody drive? I mean, how do they know that? But
That's I so this all these physics things are like I find incredibly amazing, and like I also have no idea how they figure any of it out. But when I was reading about this was specifically about the speed of light, like people had a pretty good idea of the speed of light, like in the like 1500s, which seems insane to me that like people are living in castles, fighting in suits of armor and figuring out the speed limit of the universe. Like it's just insane. And I don't think they had it like exactly right. And we like probably don't even have it exactly right right now, but they got pretty close, and that was it's very impressive that people can figure that stuff out just by sitting on, this one planet, all this weird information about the universe as a whole.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, so my husband and I have these conversations all the time. So how do you know anything that anyone tells us is a fact, right? So, somebody tells you that Newton discovered the theory of relativity. How do you know that? How could you can't disprove something. You have to accept it as fact until you can disprove it. But I'm assuming it's 93 million miles because there's no way you can know it for a fact.
It's as good as we know.
Right.
That's
Okay. Next question. What is the only food that can never go bad? And the word food is a little bit suspect here because I would say it's more of a condiment than a food. So with that little bit of clarity, Drew, what is the food that can never go bad?
So without knowing the answer, I would have said Twinkie, because you always hear that like Twinkies last forever. So like that was where my mind went first. Like it's got to be a Twinkie. And like honestly, I didn't really think that no foods could never go bad. Like everything seems to degrade, but apparently honey is a food that doesn't go bad, which I would not have guessed that in 93 million years. Like we could have gone to the sun and back and I wouldn't have known about it.
I mean, like ketchup, mustard, when you get those little packets of ketchup and stuff in there, they don't have a date on it. So I was like, okay, honey. Okay, so I'm over it. So I'm just so over it. So okay, honey. Okay, I said that because I too did not know the answer to this question. Like I said, Drew, I have a gazillion of these trivia questions for you. So, we have our fun day. Expect something weird from me. Okay, honey,
I
the
like
answer.
them.
Okay, so this next question. This is a, I knew the answer to this question from the beginning. I just didn't think it would be a real fair trivia question. So, okay, what guitarist notably performed on Michael Jackson's song Beat It?
Yeah, so this is one that I actually did know. I just read about this maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago, but it was Eddie Van Halen, and apparently, like he had a couple stipulations where he would do it. Like he didn't want to be credited, and he didn't want Michael Jackson to tell the rest of the band that it was him on there. So I guess he was trying to do it a little bit on the down low. But that's pretty cool that you got like such an amazing guitar artist on such an amazing song with another amazing musician. Like it's a very cool like team up.
Exactly. And what about Dirty Diana? Who was the guitarist who played on Dirty Diana?
Oh, I have no idea.
That was he the guitar. Let me see if I got this right. Let me just check this really quick. It's just outrageous. People should not be allowed to get old and forget things here. Guitarist. Being able to spell is one thing. Dirty. Okay, this is not a part of what we're supposed to be doing. It's because
Steve Stevens.
I thought it was was Steven? I thought it was I can't think of his name. Okay, I'm over it. You're right. Okay. When was Earth Day first celebrated?
So this is one I did not know the answer to this one. If I would have guessed, I would have said that Earth Day was created in 1975. And I say that because I had a friend who met Michael Stipe one day in the early 80s, the REM singer, and asked for an autograph. And apparently Michael Stipe told him that he wasn't signing autographs on Earth Day. Which, whatever this day in the early 80s ended up being Earth Day. So I always thought it was like an early 80s type of thing where people are just like becoming more environmentally conscious and things like that. To me, like it sounded like a very, very early 80s, but it had been around way before that. It was 1970, which is like early Unix time. So, like, way longer than I was expecting.
Yep.
When was the first time you heard about Earth Day, Rochelle?
I think the first time I actually thought about it was when there was this what was the was one of the first ladies had I think it was Barbara Bush, I think was the first time I actually saw or heard something about it. But I would have never guessed the 70s. I would have never I did not know the answer to this. I did not know.
I wonder if it came out of sort of like the hippie 60s and
But
grew out of that.
even they weren't, I mean, they were doing free love and all that stuff, but I did not think that. I did not think it was the 70s. I thought it was more closer to the 80s when people were really actually being conscious. You heard people talking about recycling because remember the first time you saw something where people were talking about recycling, it wasn't really until the 80s really that you heard people really putting effort into recycling.
Yeah, like recycling, hole in the ozone layer, like save the trees, all these things sort of, at least for me, like it seemed to be rising up in the 80s, but it's exciting that it was around before that.
Absolutely. So this one was really interesting. I knew this one instantly, so because I was the person who was always trying to eat this. But okay. In a quest to replace rubber, James Wright accidentally invented what common toy?
So this is one that I knew as well, and it was a favorite toy when I was growing up, and that is Silly Putty, which is as crazy. Like what we had as toys is just like this little piece of rubber-esque thing that you could, I mean, you can do a lot of stuff with it, but it was almost like reusable Play-Doh. You could pull it apart, snap it. I remember we would like put it on newspaper and like pull the newspaper print off, and it would look like you had a little book in your hand that was made out of putty. It was very cool. When was the last time you played with Silly Putty, Rochelle?
So Everett never played with it. It was Deschelle played with it. I can't say her age because I'm fear of my life, but probably in the early 80s, last time I had some, because she would make things out of it, and it would harden into creatures, and she would think she made a dove or a bird or something. It'd be heartbreaking to tell her that thing looked like cousin it, but so
And this
okay.
is a cool, like, early creative toy for kids. Like, it's this thing that you can, like, make into whatever your mind wants to see it as.
Yes. When you think about these kind of things nowadays, think, how many kids know what Silly Putty is these days? Probably very few.
Same with,
There,
like, Slinkies.
one of my neighbors, I have a little pen pal in the neighborhood, and I gave him a slinky. Every month I give him a book and a toy, and I gave him a slinky recently,
Oh,
and
cute.
yeah, absolutely. And he asked me what it was.
It's like this thing that like kids loved 30
Back
years ago.
exactly. So this month I'm going to give him a Rubik's Cube. Let's see what he thinks about that. Because kids don't go outside; they stay in the house and they stay online. They're just outside and playing with these kind of things. They don't. So maybe he'll find some Rubik's Cube. But Rubik's Cube has such a huge following now. I mean, there's competitions of how fast you can solve it, and Rubik's has gone even further. They make digital Rubik's Cubes. They make oh, anyway. I'm over it. Okay, next question. According to Instagram, what is the most disliked food in America? This was shocking to me. It makes perfectly good sense, but this was shocking to me.
I was surprised about this one as well. This is not one that I would have, I maybe could have got it like in the first 10 guesses, but like my first guess would have been like liver or cow tongue, or like just something gross is what I think of when I think of like foods that you don't want. Number one, liver. Like everything I've heard about liver sounds awful. I don't think I've ever had it, but sounds awful.
I'm gonna
And
make you some
then,
liver and onions the next time you come see me. I'll make you a plate of you will love it. Liver and onions is a delectable food. Oh,
give me the onions. I don't know about the liver. What does liver even taste like?
it's so good. I don't know what it tastes like. It tastes like food. I don't know. Admittedly, I haven't had any since ever. That's what caused sent me into labor was my mother-in-law made me some liver and onions. I went straight to the hospital and went into labor.
I'll keep that in mind because I don't want to be having any babies after eating
That would be remarkable. Maybe you should have some liver. You're having a baby. We might make a whole lot of money.
True.
All
But
right.
apparently the right answer is anchovies, which
Anchovy.
like I can sort of get as well.
Yes, sir. I mean, like that, like I have not had anchovies in probably 30 years, but my God, that is about this salty and it's just like the grossest. Yeah. Yep. Anyway.
Look, I
Gross.
always think, imagine them as like fish on pizza, and it just
Exactly. Yeah.
it seems to ruin the idea of that, just like ruins the idea of pizza for me.
It ruins the idea of any food. Yuck. Okay. I'm over it. Okay, I'm over it. Okay, ready?
Oh,
Okay. This one you should know, Drew. Well, maybe you're a movie buff. You know everything there's to know about these kind of things. Let's see if you get this. The line, "Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries," is from what 1975 movie?
yeah, so this is one that I definitely knew, and that was Monty Python and the Holy Grail. One of And I would say this is like a detriment to it now, is that it is so quoted by both of my worlds. People in the theater world love it, and people in the computer world love it. And between like all of that love from both of those communities, I have grown to hate that movie. Like, I do not want to watch it ever again. I've seen it enough times. I've heard all the jokes. I don't want to hear anything about it anymore for the rest of my life.
Oh my God, I love Monty Python. Oh my God, he was hilarious. Oh, you wanted to laugh? You could watch Monty Python. Oh my God, they were hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. You know,
It's funny a couple times, but we don't need to keep watching it. We get the point.
but so between Monty Python and Blues Brothers, which is better?
I probably like Blues Brothers a little bit more, but it's probably because I have not seen Blues Brothers 100 times. Like, I've been forced to watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Like, I've watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail so many times. Like, it is. It's like I never want to talk about that movie again. I've just seen it too many times. When
You know,
I saw this question, I was like, God, it's a Monty Python quote. I can't believe it.
so British comedy had its time. There was a time they were way more funnier than American comedy. I mean, they had a way because it was so, it snuck up on you. It wasn't straight in your face. You know, one day you're just watching TV and all of a sudden, wham, it just slapped you upside the head. They were really funny. They had some really good comedians. Okay, I'm going on to the next one. Which popular condiment was once sold as a medicinal cure for diarrhea? This right here was shocking.
Yeah, I had no idea about this one. When I was trying to think about like what my answer would be, like I have no idea. Like, mayonnaise sort of came to mind, but like I don't even know why mayonnaise. It made me think of mayonnaise.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, Drew, I was sitting there thinking when I saw this, I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to stop using. Now, I'm not a ketchup fan just in general. Like, this made me think, oh my God, I'm never gonna use ketchup again.
Hey, ketchup is so good though. You get it on all those fries, like, yeah.
Need to put French dressing on your fries. Go to the grocery store and buy some French dressing and put it in your pocketbook. Wherever you go, put French dressing on your fries.
Ooh, all right. I'll try that out. I like French dressing. I've never had it on fries before.
Oh my God, it's so good. In my house, wherever I am, I put French dressing on my fries. It's so good. Okay, ketchup is the answer, Drew. Ketchup. Can you imagine thinking, every time you think of ketchup, you think of diarrhea? That's terrible.
I
That's
put them both together, get those
no.
greasy fries, it'll all
Yeah.
even out.
Yuck. Okay, moving on. We don't have very much time, Drew. We got to come to the end. What was the first message sent by Morse code?
So this was another one. I would have not guessed this in a million years. I would have thought it was, when I think of like first messages, I think of Hello World from like computing, where whenever you write, like, when if you're learning a new computer language, the first thing you do is write something that prints out "Hello World," and like that's all I could think of in Morse code is like, are they Morse coding "Hello World" or "Hello"? But no, it was something much more interesting.
Well, think about when Morse code came along. So this is long before people ever thought about computers. So, this makes sense. But Drew,
The
what?
so the answer is, what hath God wrought? So, like, what has God given to us because we have created this new language?
Exactly. How amazing is that? So, Drew, this next question threw me. I thought I knew everything there was to know about this man. I've read every book I can find about him. I have a collection of his books, everything. What president was a licensed bartender?
So this is, I never would have guessed this in a million years. This guy would probably have been my last guess. But if I would have had to guess, I would have thought that like maybe somebody like Harry Truman would have been a bartender or yeah, I have no idea. Like that was a very hard one.
I would have thought Clinton. That's who I
Yeah.
would have thought. My thought went to Clinton.
Yeah, Clinton, he could have easily been a bartender. That would make perfect sense in my mind. But no, it was actually Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. You know, when in his life did he have time to be a bartender? When he's like five? When
Yeah.
was he a bartender? It was shocking.
They had a much
Yeah.
earlier drinking age back then, so he got to start a little bit sooner, I guess. But
I was shocked by that answer. It was just really shocking to me. All right, what produces the majority of the breathable air on Earth?
So this is one I would also get incorrect because I would assume it was the rainforests. I always thought we got all this air from trees, specifically like rainforest trees, and just thinking about these like huge untouched forests of like rainforests in South America. Is that where those things are? I never really remember where those things are, but that was my assumption was we get it from trees.
Yep. Nope. I mean, I knew this when this one made sense to me because I mean, like, you know, what does the ocean do? Makes all the air and everything go, makes everything move. You know, the ocean, the planet is mostly water. You know,
Yeah.
everything needs water. So, you know, how do they get the air and all that stuff? How do trees and all that stuff? It takes the ocean. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and that makes global warming even scarier because as we have less water, that means we're going to have less air.
Exactly. You know, we know what we're doing. I was watching a program last night about how earthquakes happen, and they were talking about Oklahoma. Oklahoma. You would think Oklahoma and that part of the world, you know, they're known for their hurricanes and all that stuff, you know. But what they were showing is like Oklahoma has become, you know, a world place for fracking, and they went from having less than 40 minor earthquakes to having thousands of earthquakes per year. It's like because of fracking, you know, and I'm like,
Yeah.
people don't realize what they're doing to their planet. But okay, I'm moving on from that.
Yeah.
Roughly, how many miles per hour does the Earth spin? Now, Drew, this I didn't even have a clue. You know, I'm like, just going back up there to how far we are from the sun. I'm like, how do they know this? You know, they got a calculator or something. I'm like, how did they know this? I did not know this, Drew.
Yeah, this is one I would have had no idea about. I would have maybe guessed like a million miles an hour. Like I have no idea, but it's 1,000 miles per hour is how fast it spins.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't even really know what to think about that because it's one of those things. Like, because I guess speed is relative or movement is relative. Like, we just don't know it because nothing that we relate to is moving that fast. So we're just sitting on this big old rock that's spinning around super fast.
It's so much about this rock that's shocking. You know, like rock on the inside, parts of it is on fire all the time. It's got limestone. I mean, we need to get a physicist or somebody like that on this show so we can talk about this, what's happening with this rock, so we can know when it's gonna fall apart.
Yeah,
Okay, Drew,
yeah.
this one I knew because I love the periodic table. How many elements are there on the periodic table?
So don't tell my like high school teachers this, but I would have thought like 75. I don't know. 75, maybe 100. I had no idea what this would be, like how many periodic elements there are.
I love the periodic table. I loved it, loved it, loved it. Oh, I love
It's 118. That's like a lot of elements. Are they like, do they still find new stuff to put on there? Is the last one, was it graphene or something? I can't remember what the last element was or if they even still find those things. This is
it. They
showing
do.
my ignorance.
But then they kick some off, you know, it's sort of like with the planets, you know, every time you look up, then it took one of the planets off, you know, what was the one they kicked off the planets?
Oh yeah.
Was it
Was
Play?
it
Not
Pluto?
what? Anyway, they kicked one of the planets off anyway. So I think the periodic table is like that. Every once in a while, they find one that doesn't have enough, what is it, elements to support itself, you know, whatever it is. But yes, we'll have one of these, we'll have the technology of the periodic table listed for that, our audience. Okay, Drew, what is the fear of flowers called? I did not know this.
This is one I did not know either. I would have guessed like florophobia, just because you always hear like flora being a name for flowers. But no, it is anthophobia. And I don't even know what does antho mean. I guess it has something to do with flowers.
I was thinking it was the fear of ants.
That's what it, yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yeah, anthrophilius means relating to flowers, apparently.
Yeah, no, what in the world this is all about? People need to give us better options to figure out what the hell we are doing here because it's just crazy. Okay, so we both know the answer to this one because we wouldn't be technologists if we didn't know this. But so let
Oh,
me
I
ask
didn't know this one.
you.
This
You
one, no, this is a new one to
did.
me, and I probably used this thing.
I got you. Holy Mac's first web browser. We are Apple. So Drew, you have given up on Apple. I heard you said you got a Samsung phone. Drew, we're supposed to be Mac
I
people.
do. Well, I'm talking to you on a Mac right now, so does that count?
Were you a Mac person at any time in your life?
I still like Macs. We've
Okay.
always had Android phones, but I like Macs, especially for like computing. Like, I think Macs are great computers. So that was our first computer growing up was a Macintosh, and it probably had the browser called Samba on it, but I do not remember that browser at all. I remember Netscape Navigator on there, and what was the other one that I remember? I don't remember what the other browsers were at the time, but yeah, I don't remember Samba web browser at all.
Yeah, all those weird names that have gone by the wayside, just outrageous. Now this one right here was hilarious. I'm gonna tell you something. I did not know this, but now that I know, I'm gonna be saying this word all the time. This is gonna be my new favorite phrase forever and ever. So Drew, what does Yahoo stand for? And I want you to say it out loud so our audience can hear, because this is absolutely hilarious.
So I didn't even know it was an acronym until you brought this question up. I thought it was just the word Yahoo was what it was, which I think is a great name for a company. But what Yahoo stands for is yet another hierarchically officious oracle,
Isn't that
which
wonderful?
it is. And I wonder if that is a backronym. Like, did they think up the acronym after coming up with that name? Like that, it is very interesting.
It's hilarious. I mean, first of all, what is a Yahoo? So if you think about what a Yahoo, think about backwood country people. A Yahoo is usually stand for some, not so necessarily smart person. A Yahoo, backwoods kind of person. Think about what a Yahoo is. But when you think about this, oh my goodness, I know a whole lot of people who are like this. I'm gonna start calling people this. You are just a yet another officious oracle. I'm gonna start, that's what you are. You're just a yet another hierarchical officious oracle. That's what I'm gonna start calling people from now on.
How amazing is it that
Wonderful.
Yahoo is still in business too? Like, they've been around since the beginning of the internet.
Exactly. But they have what they have spent a lot of time is doing their financial side. They have spent a lot of time becoming a financial piece of whatever it is, I don't know what
Interesting.
they do, but they are, they do something. So, but I just thought that was hilarious. I'm like, do they really tout that? Is that really do are they really still associated with this part of their name, or have they gotten away from that and they're just Yahoo? In other words, they don't associate with their real name. They
Yeah.
just go with their whoever
Their
they.
nerd title.
All right, Drew, getting out of this. We got to get to going here. What inspired the name for the iPod? Now, this was shocking to me when I saw this because I did not know this.
I did not know this either. I just assumed it was a iPod was a term that Apple made up like out of the blue. But apparently it came from the Avapod, EVA, aka EPod from 2001, A Space Odyssey. And I don't even remember the EPod in that movie, but I guess I need to watch it
Tell us what it all said when you find out.
again. Yes, like it's, and I assume it was a little like music or communication device in there.
Yeah.
But I thought that was pretty cool because I mean, 2001, that came out in the 70s, I think, late 70s.
Thanks, Kevin. We need to watch that movie again. I got to find out what I haven't seen that in forever. I don't
That's
remember
great.
much about the movie. But Drew, speaking of movies, The Magical People of Black People comes out on March 15. Did you see that?
Oh yeah. I haven't gone to see it yet, but I'm looking forward to watching it in the theaters.
Yeah. It's, what do you mean in the theaters? It comes out on the 15th. You've seen it some other kind of way?
No. I'll go see it on the 15th, is what I mean.
Oh, okay. I thought you may have found another way to go see it because I'd like to see it some other kind of way. But anyway, it comes out
Oh
on the
no. The theaters were out.
And Drew, so Everett is watching this movie called Zoo. Have you seen it?
No, what is that about? Zoo?
Zoo. It's best I can figure. I only watch minutes, seconds of it. You know, like if I'm in the same room here, because it's got violence. You know how I feel about violence. But from what I can tell, it's got animals. It sort of reminds me of Jurassic Park, it's like tigers and animals who somehow or another been modified, and they are killing off people because people have killed them off. It's interesting. Anyway, I just
Interesting.
want to check. Go Google Zoo when you get a chance. Okay, this one, we only got
I'll
two.
be on the lookout for that.
Who owns the patent to Google's original search algorithm?
So this is one, I don't know that I knew this directly, but I could pick up on the context clues for this one, and that is Stanford University, and that's where Google started. Was it was the two people that founded Google were Stanford University students, and they like built it, I think, like on the Stanford campus, like using Stanford resources, and it was all supported by the school, which also seems like crazy, but I guess they gave Stanford a lot of money in the long run, so it's probably all right.
And something to be said for that. And for our audience, you should know this. If you develop technology on, I don't want to say private property, but within an organization, they may claim rights to some of your intellectual property. You know, so like when I worked at Duke, there was that thing that they would often say, who owns the right to your development, you know. So when I was doing my doctoral program, there was discussion about who owned the right to my research. So I wrote my research on massive online courses, so MOOCs. I'll spin out the rest of it later, but you know, there was discussion about who owned the rights to my work, and so I had to make sure that I was doing my work on my technology and not theirs. So you just be aware that if you are creating anything like the sphere, make sure you know whether it's yours or whether it's your organization's. Okay. Last two questions. Who sent the world's first text message, Drew?
I had no about idea about this one either. But the answer is Neil Papworth, who was like a who's a British software developer. Is that right?
Never heard of him. Never heard
Yeah.
that name before. Never
Yeah.
heard
And
of
that's
that.
sort of sad that like he was the first person to send a text message, and his name is it probably hasn't been forgotten to everybody, but like we didn't know about it.
Yeah. Okay, last question. We probably could guess this. This is one of those trivias that has nothing to do with nothing, but it's actually a very interesting thing. How many slices of pizza does America eat per second? Not per day, not per minute, not per year, but per second, Drew. Per second pizza, per second eat.
So this is one I would have had no idea on. I would have said, I don't know, a million pieces of pizza, like a billion, 300,000. Like I have no idea. I hope that I've been like a pretty big contributor to these numbers though, because I love some pizza. But apparently the answer is 350 to 400 slices of pizza per second, which is,
A lot.
yeah.
That's a
Think
lot.
about how much pizza was eaten while we were talking during this podcast. Like, that is a lot of pizza. And it makes me happy that people are eating so much pizza because that's one of my favorite foods.
But think about that. Like, so at 4 o'clock in the morning, somebody's eating pizza. At
Well, that
six
person might be me, Rochelle. Like, that's any given time.
exactly. You know, so exactly. So, and at the end of the day, you know, somehow or another, people are eating pizza all the time. Wow, Drew. So, hello, our eminent teach technology audience. I hope you like our trivia. If you have some suggestions for our trivia, please send us trivia questions. We like it. But I love stumping Drew. It's my favorite thing to do. And the whole time of this
You're
podcast,
very good at
at stumping Drew.
it.
So I'm going to keep trying to do that, and I suggest you do the same thing because this is such a fun thing to find out what Drew knows. Now, Drew, I tell you, Drew is one of the smartest people I know, but it's also fun to stump Drew.
It was very fun. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back with you all next week.